Good evening. Thanks for tuning in. This is RMU Radio. I'm Matt. With me is Chris, and this is Sports Takeover, so let's get to it. We're going to start in the National Hockey League. Their season starts tonight, so let's get a season preview and predictions. Chris, why don't you lead us off?
All right, so first we're going to look at the Atlantic Division. I feel Boston will be the winner there. Moving on to the Metro, I think Washington will win that division. Both of those teams were very strong last year in the postseason. I thought there would be more out of Boston than there was, but they ran into a roadblock with Tampa. I think going into this season, even without Torrey Krug, they seem to look to be the best chance, in my opinion, in the Atlantic. Matt, how about you?
In the Atlantic, I'm going to go with Tampa Bay. They stood out to me last year. I don't think that they lost a lot of pieces this year. That division's interesting because it's very top-heavy. Toronto, Boston, Tampa, I think, are easily the top three. After that, you got a pretty big drop-off. So I think they have an easier path to the division, but they have some tougher teams to get through. In the Metro, I'm going to go with the Penguins. To me, it's the Penguins and the Capitals at the top of that division. The Metro is different in the sense that it's very balanced. I don't think the teams are overall as good like at the top. It's not as top-heavy, but they're not as bad at the bottom either. But I think Pittsburgh and Washington are your top two there. Washington's won it, what, 3 years in a row now?
Yeah.
I have a hard time believing that we're going to let them do it again, so I'm going to go with the Penguins.
My thought process for picking Washington was that the years the Penguins win, Washington wins. So if we keep that thought process, the Penguins should win. So we'll have to see how that plays out for us.
It's a good thought process. Western Conference, Central Division, we can go with the Nashville Predators. I think they have a defensive core that's as strong as any in the NHL. They've got some talent up front as well. They were the President's Trophy winners last year with the best record in the NHL. I don't know that they'll be that good again, but I think that they're good enough in that division. The Jets are right behind them. There were some other playoff teams and playoff caliber teams behind them, Minnesota, Colorado, St. Louis, Dallas, teams like that. But I'm going to go with the Predators. And then in the Pacific, I'm going to go with the San Jose Sharks. Big trade a couple weeks ago to get Erik Karlsson from Ottawa, arguably the best defenseman in the game, putting him with another top defenseman in the game in Brent Burns. You've got some other guys there that are strong on defense. I think the speed that they have with guys like Evander Kane is going to work in their favor as well. Vegas was the team that won that division last year. I think Vegas will be a good team, but I'm not buying into Vegas quite as much this year.
All right, I'm going to have to disagree with you on both those teams. In the Western Conference, I have Winnipeg winning the Central Division. I think even though they did lose Paul Stastny, they still seem to be the best team. They did beat Nashville in the postseason as well, and I feel like going forward this year, Mark Scheifele, Blake Wheeler, Patrick Laine, them sorts will have excellent seasons. In Nashville, they've had two strong seasons in a row now. It's really hard to stay at the top of your game for 3 years. We saw that with the Penguins this past season, so I think this year is Winnipeg's. And moving into the Pacific Division, I'm going to have to go with Vegas again. Nothing about Vegas strikes me worse off than they were last year. They've made very key improvements. They've traded for Max Pacioretty. They've added Paul Stastny, which they've only sacrificed Thomas Tatar for, essentially. Losing Nate Schmidt for 20 games is going to be tough, but I do think that their offense and the play of Marc-Andre Fleury will propel them to the lead in the division.
Yeah, I disagree with some of the things that you have there. Central Division, you talk about the Predators being at the top of their game for 3 years. I would argue that they haven't been. Last year, for sure, like I said, best team in the regular season. Definitely they were playing good hockey all year last year. But the year before, they got to the Stanley Cup final, but they got into the playoffs as not only the second wild card in the West, but the 16th team overall of 16 to make the playoffs. So they turned it on at the right time 2 years ago, but I wouldn't say that they were playing their best hockey. So I agree that that's a difficult thing to keep up, but I would disagree that they've been playing their best hockey now for two full years. The Stastny leaving Winnipeg makes me a little bit nervous. I just don't feel like they replaced him. That offense is still fantastic with the guys that you talked about, young guys, quick guys. That's going to be a very good team. I certainly agree with that. But losing Stastny worries me just a little bit. And then in the Pacific, you talked about Vegas making key improvements. To me, I don't see adding those guys as key improvements. I see them as replacing guys like David Perron and James Neal, who had solid seasons for them last year. So I give them credit for replacing the guys that they lost. I think that certainly helps them not take a huge step backwards, but for me, those aren't huge additions that help them take a step forward. My other problem with Vegas is that last year they had the Golden Misfits slogan, if you will, that they kind of gave themselves, kind of the mentality that, you know, we were all taken in an expansion draft, our original teams didn't want us, and every night that they took the ice, they were playing for a guy whose old team was on the other side. And for me this year, that's not there. They've lost some of those guys. They brought guys in who weren't a part of that. And for me, that mindset of us against the world that kind of helped them get where they were last year is kind of not there as much this year.
I think the one thing we're both overlooking with Vegas is actually how excellent Gerard Gallant is as a coach. Very, very good with Florida, fired far before his time. Sure, Florida wished they could take that back. Florida had a 100-point season with them and won their division. Then not even, what, 2-3 years later, they fired the guy, and he managed to find his way to Vegas, which was a great fit for him. I think he can coach these players better than maybe any other coach in the Western Conference, and I do think that the goaltending play of Connor Hellebuyck will be very important for Winnipeg, because there was times at last end of last season where Pekka was not the guy that Nashville wanted to look at. A lot of fans were chanting for UC Saros to come in and do some more than Rene was doing, so you hope to see Rene bounce back, but at the same point, he is getting up there in age. You don't know how many good years he really has left on him.
Yeah, if Connor Hellebuyck has another season like he did last year, I think that makes Winnipeg very scary, because they've got a good group of guys on defense as well, Dustin Byfuglien, Jacob Trouba, guys like that. So I think they're a pretty well-rounded team, and I think they'll definitely be in the mix. I think those four division winners are probably my favorites to win the Stanley Cup, or at least to get to the Stanley Cup final. But a team like Winnipeg or a team like Toronto getting to the Stanley Cup final would not surprise me one bit.
No, yeah, there's still a lot of good teams at the top of these divisions. There's only four divisions for 31 teams. It's hard to pick winners. And every year you're going to see different wild cards come out. It's hard to say what's going to happen now, but I will predict the Stanley Cup final right now, and I think that will be Winnipeg against the Penguins. I did not pick the Penguins to win the division, but like I said, the Penguins not winning the division actually ends up working out better for them in the long run.
I have the Penguins there as well, but I have them playing the San Jose Sharks. I think the rest will be big for Pittsburgh. I look at Washington, and I think hands down the team that they had last year that won the Stanley Cup was the worst team that they've had in 3 years. Regular season, the record wasn't the same that it was. The production wasn't the same that it was. But in turn, that takes pressure off of a team that has kind of folded under the pressure for a long time. They get the win. They win the Stanley Cup. For me, that puts them back in the spotlight. For me, that means that the pressure's back on them, and I think that's going to hurt them. The reason I have Pittsburgh over like a Tampa Bay kind of team is because of what I said earlier. The Atlantic is very top heavy. So if you're Tampa and you want to get to the Stanley Cup final, you're going to go through a Boston, you're going to go through a Toronto, a top team. If you're Pittsburgh, you're probably going to have to go through Washington, who, like I just said, back under pressure, doesn't play well under pressure. So I think the Penguins have a little bit of an easier road to the Eastern Conference Finals. From there, I think it's up in the air, though, because I think Pittsburgh's a great team on paper. I think Tampa's a great team on paper. I think all those teams that we've talked about in the East are great teams on paper. The Sharks, like I said, adding Erik Karlsson, I think, makes a big difference for them. I think that's a defensive unit that can keep up with that of the Predators, which I think is probably the best in the NHL. And I think the speed is going to be a big key for them, too. They had a lot of speed in 2016 when they went to the Stanley Cup final. I think they still have a lot of speed, and this is a game that's turning to speed, so I think that's going to work in the Sharks' favor.
Yeah, the Sharks, I can see. They're definitely a team that's built on paper the best, like you've mentioned, Erik Karlsson addition, signing Evander Kane after the trade last season. He looked like a good fit on their team the time he played with them, too. I can see the Sharks coming out. I feel like they're going to have difficulty against Vegas, though. It's kind of going to be like two teams beating each other up like Nashville and Winnipeg did last year. But in the East, Washington, you mentioned they're the worst team on paper last year. I think they're even worse this year because I feel like the main guy on their team they lost, Barry Trotz, that's a very excellent head coach in the NHL. I don't like the guy, but I do respect him for all he's done for Washington. Like we said, that was the worst team they had on paper, and that was a team he turned into a Stanley Cup champion. And also, maybe not as important of a loss for them, but it's still a big loss. Tom Wilson today came out, 20-game suspension. That's a quarter of the season. When the guy is not running through people's heads, he's not a bad hockey player. However, the fact that he does constantly just get his elbows up into people's heads, that's the problem with the guy. I mean, if he actually focuses on playing his game, he can be a top point producer for the Capitals, I think, which is important for them.
Yeah, when he has his act together, Tom Wilson's a very solid hockey player, but the problem is that he's too stupid for his own good sometimes. It's just, it's dumb penalties, it's dumb hits, and this time he got himself suspended for 20 games. That won't play a role come playoff time, but it's going to play a role in their early season and possibly, I mean, if they miss out on a division championship or miss out on, you know, top three in the division or whatever the case may be by only a couple points, I think you can look back at the beginning of the season and say, well, losing Tom Wilson is a big hit for them.
And he's a first-line guy, too. He was playing with Ovechkin a lot of the time. However you cut it, when you lose a first-line player, your team is not as good of a team as they are, regardless who that player is.
Yeah, I agree. So the NHL season kicks off tonight. The Capitals raise their banner, and everyone else tries to catch them. Moving on to Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball is in a very different spot than the NHL. While the NHL is just beginning, Major League Baseball is just winding down and beginning the playoffs. So before we get to the playoffs, we're going to circle back to the regular season. We're going to hit on some awards. So Chris, why don't we start with Rookie of the Year?
All right, Rookie of the Year, we're going to start in the AL. Some people might say Shohei Ohtani, not me. I think Miguel Andujar had the best rookie season in the AL. Dude had 27 home runs, 92 RBIs playing for the Yankees, third baseman, hit .297. With .328 on base. Those aren't great. .855 OPS, though, is pretty good. That's above average. 47 doubles. That's a ton of doubles. If you can get a season above 40, that's great. Let alone a rookie getting 47, that's really, really hard to come by. In the National League, I have Nationals player Juan Soto. He hit 22 home runs, 70 RBIs. Only hit .292, but had a .406 on base and a .923 OPS. Those are numbers that you see from MVP-type players, let alone a rookie. And with Bryce Harper leaving, Soto's really going to have to be the face of the franchise moving forward.
Some people will say Shohei Ohtani. I will be one of them. For anyone who doesn't know, Shohei Ohtani can play both pitcher and a fielder, which is he's kind of incredible. You don't see that very often. Most times you look at a pitcher and you see someone who can't really hit. He can do both. He hit .285, 22 home runs, 61 RBIs as a batter. He also had a .331 ERA as a pitcher. I think that's kind of unprecedented. And then in the National League, I have Acuña. First in the National League in wins above replacement, first in home runs, third in RBIs, second in stolen bases, third in batting average at .293, all among rookies. I think those are very good numbers. I was impressed with him this season.
I expected that from Acuña. Like, I've heard about him being like a top prospect for a few years. Soto really came out of nowhere. He was projected at the beginning of the season to come up in middle of 2019. That's next year. And he's only 19 years old. He started in single A, made his way to the majors, and really fit right in. Most people take a few years to get used to it. You know, gotta go single, double, triple. This guy just jumped straight from single to MLB and played without any apprehensions, really.
Yeah, very impressive. A lot of good rookies out there. Take your pick who you want. We'll find out soon. We're going to Cy Young now. Cy Young for the best pitcher. Chris, why don't you start us off?
All right. In the AL, I have Blake Snell of the Tampa Bay Rays. Kind of came out of nowhere. People knew he was a good pitcher, but I don't think people realized how good he really was. A 21-5 record for the season, 21 wins being the most for the American League. A 1.89 ERA also being the lowest in the American League. 5.6 hits per nine, 11 strikeouts per nine, and a .974 whip, which is a walks plus hits per innings pitched. Anytime you get that number below one, you're looking good. And the NL, I feel like this has to be a unanimous decision. Jacob deGrom had the best pitching season since Clayton Kershaw in 2014. A 10-9 record indicates how bad the Mets were, but a 1.70 ERA, 0.4 home runs per nine innings, 11.2 strikeouts per nine, and a .912 whip indicate that deGrom was dominant. Every start he had this season, he gave up three or fewer runs. That's the first time that's ever happened in the history of Major League Baseball. If the Mets had scored four runs in every start he had, he'd be 31-0. The Mets could not score, and that really does not tell the job that Jacob deGrom did for the team.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you on both of those. Blake Snell kind of came out of nowhere for me. I think when you look at pitching staffs like the Houston Astros have, like the Cleveland Indians have, it's easy to look at those guys, both you know the team ERA, the individual ERAs, and kind of give them a lot of credit. But Blake Snell, like you said, I mean, you gave a stat line. I won't do it again. But the ERA below two and the WHIP below one, I think, is just it's ridiculously impressive. And then Jacob deGrom, like you said, set an MLB record for consecutive quality starts. Again, ERA below two, WHIP below one, 10 wins above replacement. You talked about not getting the support. I hate the win stat for pitchers. I don't like it for goalies in hockey. I don't like it for pitchers in baseball. I think that's a team stat, not an individual stat, so I don't look at that too much. I think those guys both had really, really good seasons.
And the one thing about Blake Snell is he played in the American League East. That's where you see teams like Boston, teams like New York, both of those with so many great hitters on J.D. Martinez, Mookie Betts. The Yankees led the whole American League and almost all of baseball entirety in home runs this year. And the guy still went 21-5, 1.89. an ERA below 2 in the AL is ridiculous because the AL is considered the heavier pitching heavy league, and or hitting heavy rather, and he just dominated night in and night out. And at one point in September, his ERA was like 2.12, so he managed to knock off 20 points at the end of the season. It's just really remarkable on a team and a guy you don't expect to see.
Yeah, both of these guys playing for teams that did not make the playoffs, I think just makes it all the more impressive. Moving on, final award that we're going to cover is Most Valuable Player. I'll start in the American League. I'm going to go with Mookie Betts from the Boston Red Sox. 10.9 wins above replacement to lead all players. Batted 346, 32 home runs, 80 RBIs, 30 stolen bases, and he was ranked first in slugging percentage at 640. I will say Boston was the best team in baseball. I think that's in large part because of Mookie Betts. His teammate, J.D. Martinez, is also in the MVP race. Normally, I'm not high on picking a player to win MVP when there's somebody else on his team that is also in the conversation. I think that kind of takes away from the idea of most valuable player. But J.D. Martinez was a guy who is a designated hitter more often than not. That's a guy who's going to play offense and not play defense. So to me, a player like that, although his numbers offensively were just, you know, off the charts, and that's why he's in the conversation, to me, he's not that well-rounded player that qualifies as a most valuable player. Mookie Betts is for me. Like I mentioned, the 10.9 wins above replacement, that leads all players. The American League was very competitive, three teams over 100 wins. If you take Mookie Betts off of the Boston Red Sox, you're going from a team that's the very top in Major League Baseball to a team that's fighting for a wild card spot. And when you have that one game wild card, it makes all the difference. So I think he was huge for the Red Sox. National League, I think this guy's the favorite. I'm going with Christian Yelich from the Milwaukee Brewers. 7.6 wins above replacement to lead all National League players. Batted 326, 36 home runs, 110 RBIs. He also leads in slugging percentage on base, plus slugging percentage, and total bases. Milwaukee beat Chicago the other day, which we will talk about here in a little bit. But the point is that they won that division. They were the top team in the National League, large part because of what he did. Again, teammates on that team had a big role in what they did, obviously, to be a team of that caliber. But Christian Yelich led the way for them, and he led them to the top spot in the National League playoffs. And because of him, the playoffs in the National League go through Milwaukee.
All right, in the AL, I'm going to have to disagree. You kind of touched on this, that you have a hard time picking a player when there's two deserving players on the team. I'm going with Chris Davis of the Oakland Athletics. Had 48 home runs, hit 123 RBIs, hit 247 for the fourth straight year, funny enough, but ended up with a 326 on-base percentage and 874 slugging. 98 runs, too, pretty good. I feel like Oakland does not get anywhere near where they are without having Davis on their team. He was their backbone. Having, you know, 48 home runs, that led the American League, led the National League, too. And he really just put the team on his shoulders, said, hey, you know, we might not be the best team on paper. They have one of the lowest payrolls in baseball, too. But he was able to propel them to the playoffs. And I don't think that the A's get where they are without him, because that's a huge, huge, huge player. He was good when he's on the Brewers, but I don't think anybody thought he was going to be a 45-plus home run hitter good when he's on them. And then moving over to the Brewers, I'm going to have to agree with you and say Christian Yelich is the overall unanimous MVP in the National League. This past weekend, he started to compete for the Triple Crown, which nobody had really talked about. At one point, he was one home run and one RBI away from it. Arenado had another home run that distanced himself by two. But still, he wasn't talked about for most of the season, but he really was the player that Milwaukee needed. It helps that he stepped out of the spotlight now that he's no longer Miami, where they had Marcell Ozuna and Giancarlo Stanton sharing the outfield the past few years. He kind of got swept under the rug by them. But on the Brewers, he was able to really shine as the best player in the National League. And 1,000 OPS is just insane to me. It's really just a mind-boggling number. I feel like the Brewers are only division winners because he's on their team. Sure, there's other good players on our team, you know, Travis Shaw, Lorenzo Cain, Jesus Aguilar. None of those players are the type of caliber player that Christian Yelich is. He is just a man that is doing different things now than anybody has seen.
Yeah, very good points about Yelich. Good pick with Davis. Moving on, we're going to kind of shift our focus here towards the playoffs, but we kind of had not a playoff game. It was a regular season game, but it kind of had some big playoff implications. A couple of game 163s to break a couple ties. So we'll start in the National League Central. The Brewers played at the Cubs to decide who would take that division. The Brewers won the game 3-1. They get the top seed. The Cubs get the 4 seed, which is the top wild card. Obviously, it didn't work out well for the Cubs last night. Chris, what are your thoughts on that?
So you play 162 games, you know, the longest schedule in all of Major League sports. you can't have any other tiebreaker besides a one-game playoff. I think one-game playoffs in the Major League are just the stupidest thing possible. There's so many other tiebreakers. For instance, the Cubs and Brewers played 19 games against each other this season. Cubs won 11, Brewers won 8. That seems like a good enough tiebreaker to me. If you don't want to use head-to-head, go to division stats. Go to the National League stats, who's the better team in each league. No other sport has a one-game playoff except for baseball. I don't think that 162 games should be decided by 163rd when there's many other tiebreakers. And without that tiebreaker game, you know, the Cubs would be the top team. They wouldn't have even played yet. They'd just be waiting for the winner of the wild card game from last night. But instead, they had to play a game at home, another game at home. Unfortunately, they only scored one run in both games for them, which is not something you need whenever you're, you know, trying to fight for your dear life in the playoffs. But I don't like the idea of the 163rd game at all.
I could not agree more. 162 games is a lot of games. It's probably too many games. Why do you think you need to play 163rd? I have no idea. Like you said, they played 19 times. Why do you have two teams playing 19 times if those 19 games are going to be irrelevant in the instance of a tie? Like, there are 19 games. There cannot be a tie. They cannot split the season series because it's an odd number of games. The Cubs win 11. To me, if you are tied with the team for the division lead and you've beaten them 11 out of 19 times, you're the winner of that division. I don't know why this is even an option for Major League Baseball. I don't know why it should be a question. To me, the Cubs easily should have won that division because of the head-to-head tiebreaker, and they should be hosting a playoff game tomorrow. Instead, they're going to be watching it from home.
Yeah, in the other division, you see the Rockies traveling to the Dodgers. Dodgers winning that game by a score of 5-2. That was what people had expected, seeing how the Dodgers were the better team, I guess, throughout the regular season. They won 12 of the 19 games against the Rockies. But still, these two games, you basically have another wild card game to decide, who's going to get to play the wild card game. It's not a good idea. Major League Baseball is really behind in their playoff strategies. It was only not even 10 years ago they implemented the wild card game. So there was only four teams making it of each league, 15 for several decades before they finally got tired of their old ways and went, hey, what's a good way to make more money? More teams. I think the wild card series should be 3. I don't think there should be 163rd.
Yeah, again, I hate that this game had to be played. I like this one a little bit better just because the Dodgers won the regular season series. They also won the game. So in my opinion, the Dodgers were deserving of the division title in the first place. So for me, in this game, at least the appropriate team won. But I still hate that it was played for the reasons that we've already talked about. And this is another reason I don't like it. For the Colorado Rockies, 3 games, 3 days, 3 time zones.
Yeah, they have to travel from Colorado.
That's insane.
Travel from Colorado to Los Angeles. That's in one day. All the way across the country to Chicago for the other day. That's not good for any major league team. That's a lot of traveling. And this 163rd game messes up what some managers might want to do for their wild card game, because do you want to throw your ace out for the 163rd? Do you want to throw your ace out for, the first wild card game? It's a lot of coaching and strategizing that needs to be done that really doesn't need to be done.
Yeah, now they have to go and travel to Milwaukee again. So, and a lot of these games are away from home. It's a lot of extra travel. It's extra games that you don't necessarily want to have to be playing. And I think you said it perfectly about starting your ace. You have one game to make a huge impact on your season. You want to start your number one pitcher, but if you lose that game, you're in the same exact spot next time, and your number one pitcher isn't at your disposal. I just think playing that 163rd game is a huge disadvantage to the team that wins and an even bigger disadvantage to the team that loses.
And there was another stat I saw about the Cubs. They played every day except for one in the last 40 days. That's a lot of baseball. It's a lot of wear and tear. Some of these guys want to be resting towards the end of the season. Kind of hard whenever there's division races still going on. You think, okay, the game's over on Sunday. We get Monday off. Tuesday's the wild card game. Well, not so fast. No Monday off for anybody. You got to play your tie-breaking game. Luckily for, all four parties involved, there was two division-changing games. But, most years there's none or maybe only one. So that means the wild card team, regardless who it is, will have the upper advantage. Even if it's the worst team, there's a chance that, the better the two wild card teams could lose on Monday and still have to host Tuesday, which I don't think is a good for anybody involved.
No, I don't like it at all. But then the Rockies and the Cubs turn around. They play those games Monday. They play the wild card game last night. That was 2-1 Rockies in 13 innings. The game was in Chicago. Chris, thoughts on that?
Wild card games are interesting because player and coaches are very quick to go to the bullpens and their benches early on in the game. It was 1-0 game for up until the eighth inning, actually. Rocky scored in the first. Lester was lights out for the rest that he was in, which was only six innings, not really enough. People are afraid to keep their starting pitchers in for some reason. I don't understand why. He was dealing. He had nine strikeouts. And Kyle Freeland went 6 2/3, you know, a more reasonable stat line. That was on 3 days rest, too. First time he's done that since college. So I can accept him going 6 2/3. But the fact that they had to go through, you know, 7, 8 bullpen guys each, that's a lot. I don't think that they should be so quick to pull the trigger on their bullpen guys. But if they are going to be quick, they need to bring in the right guy at the right time. The reason the Cubs tied is because they did not bring in Wade Davis in time. The Rockies might have mismanaged it, but still, they got the win in the end with unlucky candidate Tony Walters, who was hitting 170 on the season, getting the game-winning RBI in the 13th.
Not only an unlikely candidate, but kind of an unlikely game. 13 innings is the longest elimination game in MLB playoff history. So we just talked about how, I mean, we'll go with the Rockies because they won this game. Three games in 3 days in three time zones. Then they play the longest game in the history of elimination games in the playoffs just to turn around and go to Milwaukee. So, I mean, very entertaining game. Obviously not a lot of runs scored, but very interesting result. I personally thought the Cubs would pull this one out. I mean, look, the Rockies are a good team. The Cubs were not playing good baseball, so I'm not shocked. You talked about the Cubs scoring two runs in two games in their building when they needed to win those games. So, I mean, the Rockies certainly earned it, but the Cubs kind of gave it away too.
Yeah, for what it's worth, I said the Rockies would beat the Cubs. That's kind of going back to my last week's bold prediction. We'll get to those later. But still, the Cubs had the opportunity to be the top seed in all of the National League, and they went from that to being the first team eliminated from the postseason. It's not the end of the season they want. People were asking for Joe Maddon to be fired too, which I don't understand. He's the best coach for their team. Theo Epstein said no, Joe Maddon's not going anywhere, which makes sense because why would you send the guy anywhere after he brought the World Series to them? I think it was just an unfortunate way to end their season. Kind of reminds me of the Nationals season a few years ago when they were the top team throughout most of the season up through July. Then August and September, they kind of just fell off. Cubs were the team, I thought, this year going into the National League. I predicted them to be in the World Series in April, but unfortunately, they couldn't cut it.
I predicted that as well, but I mean, it's just that's the way things go. You got to be playing well at playoff time. You got to get some breaks. Unfortunately for the Cubs, they had neither. They almost the division winner. The playoffs almost went through the National League playoffs almost went through Chicago. Now they won't even include Chicago. So we'll get to those playoffs now. Predictions for the American League first. The wild card game starts tonight. Chris, who you got?
Well, I have the A's beating the Yankees, but I did just get an update that Aaron Judge hit a two-run home run in the first inning. So that prediction is not so hot right now, but it's what I said. Now I'm going to be contradicting myself because they're already down. But the A's did not go with a traditional opener or starter. They're using the opener, Liam Hendricks, which is just a reliever. They'll go bullpen by committee. I don't know if I like that idea necessarily, but they don't have a good really starting rotation at all. Their number one ace, Sean Manea, is down for the whole season. And the rest of the guys on their team are kind of just misfits thrown on that don't really have anything to cut it. And the Yankees are obviously taking advantage of that right now.
Yeah, I didn't like that game plan at all. That's why I took the Yankees. They split the season series. But no, it's in New York. The A's are going pitching by committee, using the bullpen, no starters. The Yankees have their ace on the mound. The Yankees I've kind of been high on since the beginning of the season, so this one was kind of a no-brainer for me with the Yankees. Moving on to the ALDS, assuming that my prediction's true, the Yankees would play the Red Sox, and I'm going to take the Yankees over the Red Sox. Boston won that season series 10-9, so very close. I don't know. There's a lot of pressure on Boston as the top team. I feel like there's always pressure on that top team. And like I said, I've been kind of high on the Yankees since the beginning. So I'm gonna take the Yankees in five games over the Red Sox.
All right. Well, I'm, you know, thinking that the A's will win, and I think the Red Sox will just stomp over them. Red Sox have better hitting, better pitching, home field advantage. They are the best team in baseball this year. They will show it against hopefully the A's, but I still think that they would show it against the Yankees even if it wasn't them. And moving to the other side of the AL, the Astros play the Indians. I've got the Astros beating the Indians. Both of those teams are very tight, not record-wise, but both have excellent pitching. I think where the Astros have the advantage is they're hitting. Alex Bregman had an excellent season. Jose Altuve always hits over 300. George Springer matches home runs. the Indians just don't have as many guys. Yeah, they have Lindor and Ramirez, but after them two, it kind of falls off a lot more than the Astros fall off. So I'm going to have to go with the Astros there.
Yeah, the Cleveland Indians are a good team, but they don't impress me the way that the Houston Astros do. I have the Astros actually sweeping the Indians. I think that's a little bit of a stretch maybe, but that's what I'm going to go with. Houston won the season series 4-3. Cleveland's got a weak division. Not saying that's the only reason that they got in, but I would certainly think that that played a role in getting their record to where it was. The Astros are one of the three teams that broke 100 wins. So to me, the Astros are definitely the better team. That'll bring us to the ALCS. This will obviously be a little bit different for the two of us, seeing as how we have different teams winning before this. But for me, it'll be the Yankees and the Astros. I'm going to take the Yankees in a full seven-game series. The Yankees took 5-7 from the Astros in the regular season, so they've proven that that's a team that they can beat. It's going to be a really good matchup. The Astros are number one in Major League Baseball in ERA. The Yankees are number two in Major League Baseball in runs, so I think that's going to be a really good matchup. I could see it going either way. I went with the Yankees before the season, so I'm going to stick with the Yankees now. They've got some momentum going their way. They've got guys coming back from injuries, Judge, Chapman, guys like that. So I'm going to say a little bit of momentum, great matchup. I'm going to go with the Yankees.
Well, last year, actually, the Yankees were surprised in the ALCS. Making it to the ALCS was surprised, you know, facing the Houston Astros, taking them to seven games, which was not anything I don't think anybody expected. People knew the Yankees were going to be good, not necessarily as fast as they were, kind of like the Cubs were a few years ago. Those teams kind of remind me of each other a lot, but I said the Astros in April. I'm saying the Astros again. Astros over the Red Sox in six games. I think the Astros are just, they're better down the whole line. They have an excellent starting rotation. They'll have Justin Verlander, Garrett Cole, Charlie Morton, Dallas Keuchel. All four of those guys have ERAs under four. Two of those guys have ERAs under three. That's really, really difficult to match up against. Yeah, they have Mookie Betts and JD Martinez, but the Astros have such an excellent pitching rotation. I feel like it's just going to be hard to beat them in a seven-game series.
Yeah, regardless of who plays in the ALCS, it is going to be a good matchup. In the National League, the Milwaukee Brewers will be playing the Colorado Rockies. I'm going to take the Brewers in four games. Milwaukee is 9-1 in their last 10. Easily the hottest team coming into the playoffs. Colorado, we already kind of talked about, a lot of games, a lot of travel. I think that's going to come back to get them. I'm going to go with the Brewers.
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree with that statement. The Brewers seem to be the better team right now. The Rockies have been riding high too recently. Don't get me wrong, they had a seven-game winning streak last week, but still, a lot of traveling, played an extra game last night. The Brewers have had some time to rest. They'll have home field advantage. I think it'll just be hard for the Rockies to match up with the Brewers the whole way down. So I got the Brewers in four games.
Yeah, I agree. Dodgers and the Braves will be the other matchup. I'm going to take the Dodgers again in four games. I think this one will be a little bit closer, but the Dodgers took 5-7 in the regular season. They're going to have the home field advantage. They're fifth in runs, second in ERA. To me, the Dodgers just on paper are a better team than the Braves. I'm going to go with the Dodgers.
Yeah, the Braves are a good team. They're not a division series winning team, though, I don't think. Their division this year was pretty weak. You know, the Phillies were the next closest team with barely above 500 record. So the Braves didn't really have stiff competition. Dodgers, you know, had tough competition playing against the Rockies, tying with them, and Diamondbacks biting at them all year. Dodgers were down too early in the season in April, managed to come back, win the division. I have them being the Braves in four games. The Braves are a good team. I think they will be good for several years. They have a very good young core with Ozzie Albies and Ronald Acuna. But Dansby Swanson, one of their big top guys, he's not going to play the series.
Very good point.
That's a huge hit. And when you have people on the other side of the diamond like Brian Dozier, Manny Machado matching up against them, I just think it's hard for the Braves to be able to beat the Dodgers in a five-game set.
Yeah, very good points. NLCS, it sounds like we both are going to have the Brewers and the Dodgers. I'm going to take Milwaukee in seven games. I think it's going to be a very good series. The Dodgers won the regular season series 4-3. But again, Milwaukee will have home field in that. Milwaukee 9-1 in their last 10. They're hot, and big thing in the playoffs, no matter what sport it is getting hot at the right time. The Milwaukee Brewers are hot at the right time. I like them to win that series.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with Milwaukee over the Dodgers too. The Dodgers are a team that if they make the NLCS, it'll be their third straight year. Kind of like the Cubs last year. The Cubs last year made it 3 years in a row. You know, first year was just getting their feet wet. Second year was showing they were dominant. Last year was them kind of falling off. I kind of see a similar pattern for the Dodgers here. The Brewers they're a very dangerous team. I don't know that the pitching for the Dodgers will be able to compete with the hitting of the Brewers right now with just how well Yelich is hitting the ball. you have Clayton Kershaw, but you don't have Clayton Kershaw pitching every single game, though. And you have Hyun-Jin Ryu is going to start one of the other games, which I didn't realize that he was really doing that much for the Dodgers this year.
Yeah,
so
I didn't either.
I don't think that they really are going to be built to last against the Brewers in a full six-game series, I'll say.
And that brings us to the World Series. I have the New York Yankees taking on the Milwaukee Brewers, and I'm going to stick with the pick that I made before the regular season, and I'm going to go with the New York Yankees. Milwaukee's hot, and that scares me in a series like this. These two teams didn't play this year. But again, you're going to have a good matchup. It's this team second in runs in the Yankees versus the team with the fifth-best ERA in Milwaukee. New York on the season has scored almost 100 more runs than the Brewers. So to me, that kind of, I feel like if the Yankees can find a way to crack that pitching of the Brewers, I think Milwaukee's offense will have a little bit, kind of have a tough time keeping up with the Yankees' offense. So I'm going to take the New York Yankees to beat the Milwaukee Brewers in the World Series 4-2.
Well, you said that you had the Yankees as your preseason prediction, so I guess I have to go with mine too, which was the Houston Astros, not over the Brewers, but that's what the series is going to end up looking like in my opinion. The Astros, like I've said, great pitching the whole way down, great lineup. They're a better team than they were last year, scary as I say, and they won the World Series last year, you know, adding guys like Gerrit Cole. It really improved their team even more so than one thought they could. They will have home field advantage too if they are the World Series team, you know, having the better record than the Brewers. I feel like it might go 7 again, but the Astros, in my opinion, are the team that is to beat this year.
All right, there you go. Yankees from me to win the World Series, Astros from Chris to win the World Series. Baseball playoffs can do some crazy things, so we'll see next week at this time whether those predictions are still intact or not.
All right, we're going to take a break right now, but after the break, we're going to tell us what we learned about the NFL and college football this week. Stay tuned. Take it slow, but it's not typical. He already knows that my love is fire. His heart was a stone, but then his hands wrong. I turned him to gold and it took him higher. But I'll be a daydream. I'll be your favorite things. We could be beautiful. Get drunk on the
Welcome back. Sports Takeover on RMU Radio, Matt and Chris. We're going to move into football here for our next segment. We're going to start in the NFL. Chris, what did we learn this weekend?
Well, what we learned this weekend is that the Rams and the Chiefs are for real. Those are the only two undefeated teams, really early in the season for only two teams, but they're the only two that are undefeated. Part of the reason for the Chiefs is Patrick Mahomes, who he is insane. Did not see any of this coming to the season from him. A fun fact about him, he has more completions this year with his left hand than he does interceptions with his right hand.
That is insane, and that is my favorite stat ever. I love that. I'll jump in on those two as well. Yeah, they're definitely solidifying their place at the top. Not only are they both 4-0, they both have two-game leads over everybody else in their division. Obviously, it's early, and that two-game lead doesn't mean a lot, but there aren't a lot of teams that you can say that for right now. To be undefeated and to have that kind of lead right now is awesome for them. The Chiefs are first in points per game, and the Rams are second in points per game in the NFL. So not only are they getting it done, you know, just in terms of the score, but the stats back it up. They're playing really good football right now.
Yeah, the Chiefs' pass defense might be their only weakness, but other than that, I think they're solid through and through. And the Rams, yeah, they give up a lot of points to the Vikings, but the Vikings have a very good offense. I think the Rams are the most complete team. Chiefs, did not expect this from Mahomes, did not expect this from them, but, you know, 4 weeks in, being 4-0, they're definitely showing to be the best team right now in the AFC.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. New coaches in the NFL are not having a good start to the season. We talked about that in an earlier show. They were 0-7 in week one. They've gotten a little bit better since then. They have a combined record of 10-18, but the Chicago Bears are 3-1. The Tennessee Titans are 3-1. That's obviously a combined record of 6-2 for those two new coaches. If you take that 6-2 out, you're looking at 4-16 for the other five new coaches. 4-16 for the guys that took over teams this year.
Yeah, that's just not going to cut it for these new coaches. You would think, all right, first, second week, you know, still got some growing pains to get through. By week four, you should have your scheme. You know, there shouldn't be four wins to distribute amongst five coaches. Obviously, the Titans coach and the Bears coach have found out what they need to do. I think what the Bears coach found out is that you just put Khalil Mack on the defensive line, you will do great. Each game he's played this season has a sack and a forced fumble. That's insane.
That's crazy.
It's not necessarily just defensive player of the year type numbers. That's MVP type numbers if the Bears continue what they're doing. He is, you know, 100%, I think, the reason their defense is as scary as it is. And he, you know, he's a large part why they're 3-1 and why one of the other new coaches, John Gruden, is only 1-3.
Yeah, for sure. Another thing. All right, here's another point, and I hate saying this, but the New England Patriots are fine. People are freaking out because of a 1-2 start. I'm sick of seeing the Patriots at the top. It's not even a matter of what team I'm a fan of or anything like that. I just think that there comes a point where you want to see a different team at the top, and you're tired of seeing the same one all the time. Unfortunately, that's not the case. The Patriots, with a dominating win this past week, obviously Rob Gronkowski is questionable. We'll see what that turns into, but they are getting Julian Edelman back. The two teams at the bottom of that division, the Jets and the Bills, are both 1-3. The Dolphins are still above the Patriots in the standings. We'll see if they can keep that up and if they pose a threat to the Patriots. But as far as the Patriots just being the Patriots and don't even worry about any other team, they are fine. And if you look at the other two teams besides the Dolphins in the AFC East, they're not going to be challenged. The Dolphins could challenge them. They have some ground to make up on the Dolphins. A lot of time to do it. But they've already got a lead on the Bills and the Jets. It's not going to make a difference. They're fine.
Yeah, and if the Dolphins play as, you know, 38-7 loss, great, as they did this past week, I don't think the Patriots have anything to worry about. We're a quarter of the way through the season. I don't think anybody thought the Dolphins were going to be, you know, a 3-0 team, but the team that they showed on Sunday really showed like the team that they are going to be the whole season. And the Patriots, like you mentioned, Julian Edelman coming back, have Josh Gordon. They still have Chris Hogan, Rob Gronkowski, James White's great out of the backfield. A lot of targets for Tom Brady. Nothing to worry about there. A team that there is stuff to worry about, though, the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Oh, the Steelers.
1-2-1. Not the start that anybody predicted, hoped, wanted, prayed for, but the start that we have. I feel like a big part of that reason is Le'Veon Bell. Without Le'Veon Bell, the offense kind of is one-dimensional. Ben has the most yards in the league passing this year, but that's because he's just throwing the ball way too much. James Conner looked good in the first week against Cleveland, but that was just Cleveland. He hasn't really done that much since then. And without Le'Veon Bell, Antonio Brown is not as good of a player too, which is an interesting statement, but when you think about it, Bell takes so much of the defense's attention that Brown gets open. Without Bell, the defense can be double, triple teaming Antonio Brown. There's a play in the red zone against the Ravens where there was literally two cornerbacks both in press coverage on Antonio Brown. It's kind of ridiculous, but without these other threats, yeah, Juju's had a good year, but I don't think he's the player that Bell is. There's no way that the Steelers can be the Super Bowl predicted team people thought they were if Bell does not show up in week seven bye, like you say he's going to.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Bell's totally the reason that the Steelers are to the start that they are. I definitely agree that they're one-dimensional in the fact that Ben Roethlisberger has been tasked with doing far too much. But to me, I don't think that it's necessary. To me, I feel like James Conner proved what he can do in week one. I feel like you got to stick with the run a little bit. I don't know. I don't like some of the plays that we're running. Some of the quick throws are not on the same page. It's just, I don't know. They're one of the teams that should be contending that isn't. A team like the Minnesota Vikings is another one. I mean, they played a great game this past week, offensively at least, but the Rams were just a little bit better. They're sitting at 1-2-1, are the Vikings, two-game losing streak. I mean, the Eagles, you could say the same thing for. They're sitting at 2-2. That's defending Super Bowl champions that, I mean, 2-2 is not as bad, obviously, as 1-2-1, but, I mean, you've got this mix of teams that should be contending that just isn't right now.
When you look at those teams, something that you don't think about, the Vikings lost one of their coordinators, Pat Shurmur. He went to the Giants. Steelers, I wasn't a fan of Todd Haley, but he was, as hard as it is to say, I guess he was a good offensive coordinator. I mean, our offense was, it doesn't sound right saying it, but
it doesn't.
If you look at the offense this year, it's not the same. I didn't like the plays that Todd Haley ran, but I don't know that the guy that we have now, Randy Fichtner, is really all that much better. And the Eagles also lost their offensive coordinator, Frank Reich. He now went to the Colts. These are three teams that lost, when you lose a coordinator, that's a big part of your team, and I think these teams are starting to show it right now.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with some of these teams that maybe should be contenders, but that aren't. Switching course to college football, what we learned this week in college football, I'll start in the Big Ten Conference. I think at this point it's pretty clear to say that the Big Ten runs through Ohio State.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. 27-26 win over Penn State at Penn State shows that they are the dominant team. They don't have really that stiff of a competition. Michigan later in the season, but Michigan has not looked like that great of a team under Harbaugh this year.
And they get them at home.
Yeah, that's a big, easy win, really, I think, for Ohio State. They have the next 3 weeks none ranked opponents. They jumped above Clemson in the standings now. I think it's really their college football playoff bowl berth to lose.
Yeah, I agree. The SEC is back. Not that the SEC ever went away, but I think the last couple of years you could have made a case that the Big Ten was the best conference in college football. I don't think you can make that case right now. I think it's the SEC. They have four teams in the top 10, six in the top 25, and they have the top two teams. So they've got the number 1, 2, 5, 8, 13, and 22 in the country. Those are the ranks of their top teams. So, yeah, I think the SEC is the conference to look at right now.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. When you make up almost a quarter of the top 25, your conference is definitely the best. Kentucky was a team I don't think people knew or thought that they would be as good as they are. I know I personally didn't. And definitely Florida was a team that went 5-7 last year, now finding themselves back in the top 25. Tough competition this week against LSU. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But the SEC, I think, has overtaken the Big Ten when you have teams like Michigan and Michigan State losing games they shouldn't lose anymore. Ohio State and Penn State were, they're still a top two in the Big Ten, but Ohio State beating Penn State kind of diminishes Penn State's reputation, I think, just a little bit.
A little bit. It certainly tips the scales in favor of Ohio State.
And I think, that game shows Urban Meyer is the better coach than James Franklin. There was a very, 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 very questionable 4th-and-5 call that Penn State had in their last drive, which could have changed the course of the game. They called timeouts to call a draw play on 4th-and-5 when they had no running game all night. I don't know. That's hard for me to comprehend.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. I agree.
I don't think there's anything more to say about that.
Confusing. One more team for me in the top 25 that's really making a big statement. I think Notre Dame is absolutely for real. Right now they're 5-0, the number 6 team in the country. Last week, Stanford's ranked number 7th. They beat them 38-17. That's a solid win against a good football team. They also beat Michigan earlier in the season, who also was ranked at the time and is still ranked. Notre Dame is an independent team. They don't play in one of the Power 5 conferences, but for me, they've proven what they can do. They've got another ranked opponent this week, and if they can find a way to win out this season, I think Notre Dame gets in. Notre Dame's for real.
Yeah, Notre Dame's one of those interesting teams. They're So they're technically they're independent, but they like have agreement with the ACC where they play mostly ACC opponents. Unfortunately, well, fortunately for them, but unfortunately for college football fans, no game against Clemson this year. So that kind of will help them too. Yeah, like you mentioned, they have a game this week against number 24 Virginia Tech. It's gonna be tough because they have to travel down to Blacksburg. That's not an easy environment to play in. But they have shown, you know, beating two top 15 teams this year, they are for real. I did not expect this from them either. I thought, okay, you know, they'll be a middle of the pack, you know, maybe 9-3, 10-2 type team. But they're just sitting at number 6 in the nation. I think it's very well deserved.
Yeah, so there's some headlines from the NFL and college football. Did we learn a lot? Did we learn nothing? We'll see. There's a lot of football left to be played.
All right, coming up, we got quick picks, bowl predictions. Stay tuned. We'll be back shortly.
Welcome back, RMU Radio Sports Takeover, Matt and Chris. We're going to go into our quick picks. Chris, do you want to lead us off?
Sure. First game we got in the NFL schedule, we got Jags against the Chiefs. I'm going to go with the Jags. The Chiefs, I know I was praising them before, I think the Jaguars are going to be the better team in the long run. Their defense is much better than KC's. Blake Bortles is doing well this year. I have to go with the Jags.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Jaguars as well. They're number one in scoring defense. The teams that the Chiefs have played previously, the Steelers were 26th, the 49ers were 27th, the Chargers were 28th, and Denver was 17th. So they haven't really played anyone of this caliber, so I'm going to go with the Jags. Vikings at Eagles, interesting. We talked about these two teams kind of underachieving. I think this is a bigger game for the Vikings, so I'm going to go with the Vikings.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. It's a matchup with the NFC Championship game. Vikings got some ill will. You know, I thought they'd win that game, did not win. They're 1-2-1. Eagles are 2-2. Neither of these teams wants to lose. Maybe a tie? Probably not a tie. Probably going to be the Vikings. The Eagles don't seem to be the same team this year. Next, we've got Monday Night Football action. A surprise 2-1 Redskins against the 3-1 Saints. I'm going to go with the Saints. I'm a big fan of Drew Brees. I think Alvin Kamara is just tearing it up this year. Mark Ingram comes back this week as well, which is big for their offense. Redskins, I don't think, are a truthful 2-1 team. I think the season will show them as more of a 500 team, so I'm going to go with the Saints.
I'm actually going to go with the Redskins. New Orleans is 1-1 at home, that win being a 3-point win over the Cleveland Browns. I have faith in the Redskins coming off the bye week. I'm going to go with Washington. College football, number 13, Kentucky, traveling to Texas A&M. I'm going to go with Texas A&M. They have two losses on the season, but those losses are to Alabama and Clemson, two very good teams. They're at home. They have a very good home field advantage. And it's a student versus teacher kind of thing with the coaching matchups this week. Mark Stoops versus Jimbo Fisher. I'm going to go with A&M.
You've made a lot of good points about A&M, but you can't discount the fact that Kentucky's 13 overall, 5-0. Stoops, I think, is a good coach. You know, didn't start off too well for Kentucky, but has gone 7-6 in the last few seasons. It's odd that you'd see a 13 traveling to a different school that's not ranked and being an underdog, but Kentucky is the underdog this week, but I'm going to have to go with them. You mentioned A&M had some, you know, good quality losses against Clemson and Bama, but I think they have to add another one to their list with Kentucky this week. Another SEC matchup, top 25 matchup this time. We got number 5 LSU traveling to number 24 Florida. Florida's not a team I believe in. LSU is a team that I think is shown through and through. They are excellent this season, you know, beating teams like Miami and Auburn. I'm going to have to go with LSU.
I'm going to go with Florida. They're 9th in scoring defense, 19th in total defense, 1st in takeaways. LSU's taken 6 of the last 8 matchups, but the last 4 have been decided by 7 points or fewer. I'm going to go with Florida at home. Texas and Oklahoma. I'm going to go with Oklahoma. Kyler Murray, for me, is going to get the job done. This is a team that's 12th in offense, 8th in scoring. It's going to be a great matchup, but I'm going to go with Oklahoma.
Yeah, I'm with agree. Got a nice Red River rivalry shootout here. Oklahoma is an excellent team. You know, they put up 66 against Baylor. Kyler Murray, whether he does it on the baseball diamond or on the college football field for Oklahoma, he's a Heisman candidate. I think he will roll over Texas. And lastly, we're going to move into the NHL, which we can finally do after a few weeks. Tomorrow night, we've got Pens against Capitals. I have to go with the Pens. Caps will be coming off, you know, a game tonight. Two games to start the season we saw last year for the Penguins is not a great start. Penguins are a better team this year. They want to take out revenge against the team that beat them in the playoffs. I'm going to go with the Penguins.
Yeah, you hit it head on. I don't like the back-to-back for Washington. I saw it with the Penguins last year. I don't like it. I'm taking the Penguins at home. That Tom Wilson suspension that we talked about, it's going to kick in right away. I think hurting Washington, I'll go with the Pittsburgh Penguins. Bold predictions we're going to go with here to wrap up the show. I'm going to start in the NHL. Actually, all of mine are in the NHL. With the Buffalo Sabres, the Buffalo Sabres were the worst team in the NHL last year. I'm going to say that they will have the largest increase in points of any team in the NHL. They've got young players who are getting good experience. They've got another season under their belt, guys like Jack Eichel. I think they picked up some key players from the Penguins. We were just trying to get rid of some salary cap. I think those are guys that can benefit the Sabres. They traded O'Reilly to the Blues. I think they got some great pieces back there as well. And that division's not as strong. I think they can definitely make up some ground against some of those teams in the middle or towards the bottom of the Atlantic Division. Buffalo Sabres make a big jump this year.
Yeah, my first bold prediction is going to be pretty much in line with yours. It's about the Buffalo Sabres. Last season, worst in the league, 62 points. I think they're going to pull another Colorado. Like last season, Colorado was 48 points the prior season, made the playoffs. I think Buffalo will make the playoffs this year. I'm going to say they're going to get at least 92 points. That'll be a 30-point increase, which I would have to guess is going to be the largest increase in the league this year, too. So we pretty much have a very similar first bold prediction. Like you said, they got some good pieces with Hunwick and Sherry from us. Getting rid of O'Reilly, good goal scorer, but got good pieces back. And they add Jeff Skinner, number one overall pick. Buffalo is a team to look out for.
Yeah, I agree. Also with the NHL playoffs, I'm going to say 5 new teams get in this year that did not get in last year. 5 new teams. I'm going with the Florida Panthers, Carolina Hurricanes, Edmonton Oilers, Dallas Stars, and Calgary Flames, all to get into the playoffs this year. Some of those are a stretch, some of those not quite as much, but I'm going to say those 5 teams make the playoffs this year.
I mean, you're taking out 1/3 basically of the playoffs and replacing them. Yep. That's bold. One of those teams that you mentioned, Edmonton and Calgary, they could easily replace the Anaheim Ducks, who my second bold prediction will be that the Ducks will go from last season having 101 points. They will be the worst team in the National Hockey League this season. They will fall off immensely. They have several injuries. They did not look like a strong team last year. Jonathan Gibson will only be able to pull them so far. I just think they're going to break down, trade away some of their key pieces. I don't think they're going to last the season.
They are definitely in a tricky spot to start the season. My final bold prediction, sticking with one of those teams that I said would make the playoffs, the Calgary Flames, I'm going to say that Johnny Gaudreau will win the National Hockey League's Most Valuable Player. I think he's going to lead the Flames to the playoffs. He had 84 points last season. I'm looking for that to increase this year. I'm going to say Flames get in. Johnny Gaudreau is the reason why. Johnny Gaudreau wins the Most Valuable Player for the National Hockey League.
Yeah, Johnny Gaudreau is a player that people really don't think about as much. You know, people kind of seem to sweep Calgary under the rug. But, hey, he's called Johnny Hockey for a reason. I think that's a very – that's not necessarily a bold prediction, but I think it definitely could happen. My last bold prediction will be staying a little bit closer to home with the Pittsburgh Penguins. Sidney Crosby will get at least 105 points this season. If he gets more than that, might as well give him the MVP ball wrap, but I'm not going to go that far. I'm just going to stick with 105 points. I think this is a season that he has the best to work with. We are in the best position we have been in years. I think he will easily get 105 points.
That would be, I think, great not only for the Penguins, but also great for the National Hockey League. That's all the time we have for tonight. Sports Takeover. Thanks for joining us here on RMU Radio. I'm Matt. Chris is with me. We'll see you next week, Wednesday at 8 o'clock.